The strings that are called white denote clarity, that which is self-evident. It bespeaks the power of the human mind to perceive, to deduce, to innovate. And then there is Tchelet, blue, which according to the Talmud represents the furthest reaches of heaven itself. Tchelet represents mysteries that the human mind cannot fully explain. It's appropriate then that these colors ultimately adorn the symbol of the Jewish state. Welcome to A Journey Through the Siddur, Episode 10, Blue and White in Jewish History and Jewish Prayer. I'm Meir Soloveitchik.
Rabbi Soloveitchik's Journey Through the Siddur series is sponsored by Sherry and Neil Cohen in memory of their parents, Beatrice and Paul Milberg, and Harriet and Norman H. Cohen.
The image of the birth of the Jewish state on May 15, 1948, the 5th of Iyar, Erev Shabbat afternoon, is justifiably famous in the annals of Jewish history. The photographs of the Declaration of Israeli Independence center, of course, on David Ben-Gurion, reading that now-renowned document. But two other individuals on the dais are also noteworthy, and their presence bespeaks a larger debate about the nature of the event. One is Rabbi Yehuda Leib Fishman Maimon, who insisted to Ben-Gurion that the declaration must contain a reference to God. The other is the ardently secular Aaron Zisling, who refused to sign any document that explicitly invoked the divine. As Rabbi Fishman Maimon recounted, he had been summoned from Jerusalem in order to participate in the event. Quote, "In Jerusalem, a young man sought me out and told me, 'Rabbi Fishman, we have an airplane waiting for you. Please come immediately.' I replied, 'I cannot come immediately. I must get my talit, tefillin, and other items.'" End quote. Rabbi Fishman was then taken, as historians recount, in a very tiny airplane, a somewhat terrifying and brief journey. He continued, quote, "During the trip, my feet sometimes floated above my head and my talit and tefillin were strapped to my body. We traveled thus for almost 3 hours until we landed at airport close to Yafo. I was met there by some representatives of the Jewish agency and taken to the home of Mr. Ben-Gurion. A meeting was in process and 5 or 6 people were present. I asked the purpose of the meeting. Mr. Ben-Gurion told me that they wanted to proclaim the State of Israel the following day. I called Ben-Gurion aside and asked, 'Have you got another airplane beside the one which brought me here?' A committee was selected to draw up the wording of the proclamation, and I was made a member. When the draft was completed, I insisted on an allusion to God's help, and a compromise was finally reached on the words, 'Rock of Israel.'" End quote. In other words, because of this debate that Rabbi Fishman Maimon had with Aaron Zisling, the compromise reached was that Israel's Declaration of Independence would conclude by asserting that each signer was placing his or her trust in the Tzur Yisrael, the Rock of Israel, a phrase from the Jewish liturgy inspired by the biblical reference to God as Tzuri V'Goali, my Rock and my Redeemer, references that we will see very soon in our own journey through the Siddur. In the declaration, utilizing the Rock of Israel, but not the Redeemer of Israel, as a reference, the document was one that both devout and atheistic Zionists could affirm. For believers in the Bible, the phrase would refer to the divine defender of the Jewish people. For the secular signers of the document, the words could refer to something else, perhaps the flint-like resolution of the Israeli army. Thus we have a strange scene right before Israeli independence. The British were departing, the Arab armies were descending, and the Jews were debating the existence of God. And the document was produced in a way that the signers were able to not openly confront the issue. But that is not, ladies and gentlemen, the whole story, for there is a reference to God on the original document of the Declaration. One need only know where to look. And we retell this tale as we examine a passage in the Siddur that, rightly understood, captures the providential nature of Jewish history itself. It's often said that the Shema contains 3 paragraphs, but in truth, this is not correct. The first 2 paragraphs of the Shema, which speak of the love of God, teaching of Torah, tefillin, mezuzah, and observance of the general mitzvot, make up the Shema, meaning these passages help fulfill, in either biblical or rabbinical form, the commandment in the Torah to recite the Shema in the morning and the evening, or in the words of the Torah, b'shachpecha uvkumecha, when you lie down and when you rise. The third paragraph, the one that follows these two, is there to fulfill an entirely other obligation, which is the commandment to remember the Exodus from Egypt daily. This too is considered to be a biblical obligation stemming from a verse in the Torah, l'man tiskor et yom tzeitcha me'eretz Mitzrayim kol yimei chayecha, so that you will remember the day that you left Egypt all the days of your life. Thus, the purpose of reciting this paragraph following the 2 paragraphs of the Shema is to remember the Exodus. The central verse of this stanza is the final one. Ani Adonai Eloheichem asher hoceiti etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim liyot lachem l'Elohim, ani Adonai Eloheichem. I am the Lord thy God who took thee out of the land of Egypt to be unto you a God. I am the Lord your God. But the truth is that many passages in the Torah make mention of the Exodus, and really many of them would have suited for the fulfillment of the commandment to remember the Exodus. The passage in our Siddur is largely about another commandment, tzitzit, the ritual fringes placed at the corner of four-cornered garments. As this passage in our Siddur tells us, the mitzvah encompasses two sorts of string, those which are called lavan by the Talmud, white strings, and the petil techelet, the blue fringes, that are in color like unto the heavens. And though there is much to say about the placement of this paragraph after the Shema, it is worth reflecting today how these colors embody the story of Jewish history itself. Blue and white made their way as well into many versions of the colors of the ritual prayer garment, the talit, which was often created as white with blue stripes, and ultimately that inspired the flag of the State of Israel. It was Rabbi Joseph Soloveitchik who, reflecting on the colors of the tzitzit and the Israeli flag, once suggested that these two colors provide us with theological symbolism. The strings that are called white, he argued, denote clarity, that which is self-evident. It bespeaks the power of the human mind to perceive, to deduce, to innovate. And then there is Techelet, blue, which according to the Talmud represents the furthest reaches of heaven itself. Techelet represents mysteries that the human mind cannot fully explain. As he noted, the sky is only blue because of our distance from it. As Rabbi Soloveitchik put it, while the color white refers to the clearly perceptible, the blue refers to a realm that is only barely grasped. Or, if I could put it slightly differently than Rabbi Soloveitchik, the blue is a reminder of what Hamlet said to Horatio, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your philosophy. Thus, the blue and white of tzitzit are a reminder of the Jewish relationship with God, Rabbi Soloveitchik further explained, because the colors bespeak both the Jewish faith in human capacity, but also the mysteries of Jewish life, Jewish history. It's appropriate, then, that these colors ultimately adorn the symbol of the Jewish state. Zionism embraced Herzl's proclamation in the ability of the Jewish people to achieve what it put its mind to. If you will it, it is no dream. And indeed, so much that has been achieved was an immense human achievement, a tribute to the brilliance of great statesmen and to the courage of so many Jews. But, of course, the story of Israel is also a sign of Techelet, of miracle. From Herzl's own story, an assimilated Jew who came out of nowhere and helped launch a movement that created a country, and of course so many events after that. The story is not only of white but also blue, something that resists full explanation, a sign of the supernatural. Herzl Zionism was born in an attempt to create a human response to anti-Semitism, but in the end, the story of the state also illustrated something miraculous about the Jewish people and its story, that it is a chosen people with an extraordinary destiny. It's fitting, then, that in the end, the Declaration of Israel's Independence does have a reference to Providence, if you know where to look. If you find Rabbi Fishman Maimon's signature, and you can read Hebrew script, you will see that he added a few more letters, a traditional Jewish abbreviation. As he himself said, "When my turn came to sign the scroll, I wrote my name, just as everyone else had, but that didn't suffice for me. I wanted to add. But Moshe Shertak, who was supervising the signatories, was alarmed and asked Rabbi Fishman, 'What are you doing there?' 'You'll soon see for yourself,' I replied." And then Rabbi Maimon further added and explained, "He saw how I had added alongside my name four letters, Bet Ayin Zayin Hey." End quote. And as Rabbi Fishman Maimon explained, that is the abbreviation for Be'ezrat Hashem, through the help, the assistance of God. With the assistance of the Almighty indeed, because the unfolding of the story of Israel has reflected not only human achievement, but also providential miracles. The historian Martin Kramer, in an article about this debate regarding the Declaration, gives us one more anecdote about Rabbi Fishman Maimon and his theological opponent, Aaron Zisling. Quote, "Immediately after Ben-Gurion finished reading the Declaration, Rabbi Fishman recited the Shehecheyanu, the traditional blessing of Thanksgiving. This wasn't spontaneous, although many would recall being surprised it was a planned part of the program. 'Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has granted us life, sustained us, and enabled us to reach this occasion.' A wave of emotion swept the audience. Rabbi Fishman would later recall looking out of the corner of his eye and glimpsing, of all people, the radical Mapam heretic Aaron Zisling, who had tried to keep any hint of God out of the Declaration. This is what he saw. At the museum, when I recited the blessing in front of the nation's dignitaries, suddenly I saw Zisling remove a handkerchief from his pocket and cover his bare head." End quote. So, Kramer writes, and it's not only an interesting anecdote, it's a further reminder to us that the story of the Jewish state has become the greatest sign of God's presence in history in our time, and that Jewish faith has itself flourished in the Holy Land. That can be seen, strikingly, from the inspiring image that we see of IDF soldiers in the current war. We see them marking Shabbat in tanks, kindling candles from Chanukah, reading from the Torah while on the field of battle, which means that we are in a hinge moment, a time in which we see in the IDF a fusion of fighting and faith akin to the Maccabees. And if blue and white is mentioned every day as part of the liturgy known as the Shema, it inspires us to reflect on the blue and white of the sweep of Jewish history and to pray that more inspiring images of Judaism and the Jewish story will emerge in the years to come. This is Meir Soloveitchik wishing you a Shabbat Shalom. Looking forward to learning together next week. Signing off.